old experienced jocks with young producers, and that worked very well. And I'm just about to go on air, and the phone goes. And my last show, Peel was in tears.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which you hear from those who made a difference. Adrian Just.
I didn't have a particularly happy childhood, but my parents were okay. We were just stuck in South Leicestershire, quite a little backwater in the 50s. I was the smallest in the class, and so you develop, whether you develop the sense of humour as a defence mechanism, I don't know. But it came in very handy. Yes, I was not bullied like today. But if you did get, you stood up for yourself. But it's easier said than done. Making them laugh, and I used to make the teachers laugh as well. They had to admit defeat sometimes. And you know, if you're a teacher, you know when to hold and when to fold. And if I got the class all laughing, then they'd go along with it. And I met those teachers back in 1998. Some of them were still alive. And my old had a lovely English teacher. Well, he's a bit of a tyrant. But I met him in 1998, and I said, thank you so much. He said, well, because I never remember the pupils, you know. I think it's a defence mechanism if you're a teacher. But I said, you said to me, when I got the class laughing, and he said, it's not so much what he says that's funny, it's the way that he says it and the timing. And he spotted that, you know. I said, thank you so much. And he said, did you put that in good effect? I said, yes, I did, with the BBC. Yes, the class clown, really. So I was working in an audience even in those days.
This is the BBC Light Programme. Here is the news.
I was fascinated by the radio. It's all we had. It had a big old Sobel set with the valves in. We used to have, you know, Friday night is music night. I've got friends who still work on there. Do, 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 do.
Friday night is music night.
Used to have that, used to have Any Question, used to have the Goon shows. Of course, comedy played a big part. You know, Hancock's Half Hour, the Goons, of course, Razor Laughter, Educating Archie, we sort of put up with. But it was the breeding ground for so many stars. So I just loved the comedy shows, and when I got to know Bob Monkhouse and everything, we'd spend ages talking about these old shows. But that's all there was.
I'll put this record on my portable military gramophone. What a strange sight it must have been, me and the dusky beauty, tangoing through the dense jungle on foot.
I only had eyes for him, and he only had eyes for me.
That explains why we fell over a cliff.
I didn't know what I was going to do. I was... In those days, of course, if you got sacked on a Friday, you could walk into four different jobs on a Monday. I did a spell of engineering. Somebody always got you in. There always jobs you could get into, and fairly well paid. I don't remember worrying about money too much. And I started off selling shoes. I always wanted to be a mechanic, so I went from selling shoes to be a mechanic at a place called Bachelor Bowls in Leicester, the Vauxhall dealers. So I've done more tappets on FB Victors than you can shake a stick at. And I think they had a bit of a cull there. They wanted me to work on trucks. And there's nothing worse. When it's freezing weather, and the old diesel used to freeze because it had water in. So you're out there, sub-zero temperatures. I thought, no, I'll go back to selling shoes. So I was sort of mucking about with that for 10 years or so.
This is BBC Television.
We had television. We finally got a black and white television. Well, they're all black and white in those days. Channel 4 and Channel 8. Channel 4 was BBC in the Midlands. And Channel 8 was ITV. And I wasn't allowed to watch ITV. They said, no, it's trash and the work of the devil. I mean, all these years on, fun, turns out they're right. I've seen Love Island. But that's all we had. So the radio was the main thing. The radio was the main thing, and all those comedy shows, and but it was a wonderful source of entertainment. It just pulled the strings together for the country, made us a great nation. And of course, the beauty of that was you got collective knowledge. If you're talking about the Goon Show, everybody had heard it the night before. There was, you know, none of this, I'll watch it on Listen Again in 3 weeks' time. Everybody had seen it. So you could be the class clown as well by just doing stuff, repeating acts and doing impressions from what had got on the radio the night before. And then the pirate stations, of course, which was such a such a formative moment for most of us. You know, they came on, it was like a curtain being pulled aside and say, here, this is it. This is the radio you want.
Radio Atlanta broadcasting to you. We'd like to tell you today that the ocean is, it has some very big, gentle swells. There's no white caps or anything, but, going up and down a little bit, so on and so forth. Earlier today, it was very, very beautiful, very calm. An awful lot of the small yachts went by, and, of course, the big
we
ship,
had, what was it, Atlanta, tinny old transistor radios with them, and I heard this sort of noise at Atlanta and a bit of music. Didn't take too much notice about it. And then, sort of the next year,
from Pigtail,
and my father, it was 276 metres on the old Sobel, and he'd not tuned it in properly, so I had the special years, Val Doonican, and it faded out, and there's Duncan Johnson. Val Doonican, the special years, Radio London, Tuesday. What the bloody hell? And it was just like an explosion. It was just wonderful. I thought, this is it.
From the Radio London Alzheimer's hit parade, Tony Bennett, the Firefly, revived 45.
And then, of course, I was tuned into that for the next few weeks, and then got to know all the disc jockeys. And I learnt more listening to Dave Cash than anything. I did tell Dave Cash before he died. I said, most of the stuff, I had basic stuff on radio, I learnt from you, because he was talking about it and the cartridges and queuing the records up. I thought,
10:30 past the hour of 12, and we're in Christmas Day 1965. And if you feel like you're having a kind of a swinging party, why don't you relax, kind of smooch a while? Always nice to smooch on a Christmas Day.
I was up in Leicester, I got no. The nearest studio was 100 miles away. Well, the Hospital Radio Birmingham, really. But it was just a revelation. And then I thought, yes, this is it. And part of the swinging 60s. And us youngsters were taking over.
Big girl.
I thought, there's no way I'm going to get into radio because I can't. There was a broadcasting house, and that was it, basically. It was a slight generalisation. But that was it. So I thought, I'll build my own studio. So I got a couple of tape recorders and started like talking to myself, doing the voices, then doing the responses and learning how to and listen to myself doing various impressions. And then I got a couple of turntables. I mean, this sounds very, very bread and butter now, but in those days, and I got a couple of the cartridge machines because I was fascinated with the tape cartridges with the jingles, and they cost a fortune. I worked for 2 years in the shoe warehouse, and all my money went on these two machines.
For the first time, nearly 300,000 people are going to have their own local radio station, the first local community service of the air in this country.
I was doing stuff for Radio Leicester. I was doing stuff for Radio Leicester then. Just a cough and a spit. A chap called Ron Coles, very big in the radio in Leicester and with the radio authority. And he started me off, put me on. I used to do little jingles and jokes for Ron's show. And then they got me in working as a TO, as a tech op. They're doing all the playing all the tapes and stuff in, and I think it was 7 guineas a shift. The BBC always paid you in guineas. It was great, like the racing fraternity. They had me for that, and I've always got Edward Heath to thank for getting me full time into the radio, because it was 74, and all the, remember the miners' strike.
As Prime Minister, I want to speak to you simply and plainly about the grave emergency now facing our country.
But the miners' strike came on, and they said, look, we've suddenly, local radio, everything, the TV went off at 10:30 to save power. But of course, radio could stay on, because people on the batteries and with the battery sets, and it was also handy for telling them where the power cuts are going to be the next day. So they suddenly, I think the BBC were given this huge cash injection of £100 a week for this local broadcasting. So there was like manna from heaven. And Ron Cole said to me, look, we need somebody to panel bash for these shows. And you also do a show, a pop show, with a Scottish guy called Dave Jameson. Lovely chap, retired in Spain now. But marvellous broadcaster. We used to work well together. And he said, if you want to make it full-time... Now, so I gave it with the shoes, and that was it. I think everybody eventually went back to work and the lights came back on. Epic House, Harpic House, we called it. Eighth floor. And there was a Leicester News Service run by a chap called Roland Orton on the ninth floor. He was an old journo archetype, straight out of central casting for an old journo. So a lot from him about news presentation and all that. They were just a nice bunch. And as I say, there was no pressure on me to start with because I was part-time. When you do it full-time, of course, then you go. But I was always there on time and always got the... I mean, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but some of the old tech ops were not, you know, you got three lollipy old Philips tape machines and everything. So if you're doing a 10-minute news bulletin and they wanted inserts in, they said, who's on? So if I was on, they put about six inserts in because I could just flip them around and all that. But I was okay. I was slick with the kit then. The old Mark 1 desk, no compressors. No compressors, Thorens 124s. You see them on eBay now. I had two of them. I wish I'd have kept them. They are going for silly money. But the Thorens and a couple of Ferrographs. And of course, they had a couple of the old big Philips, the Philips ones from Bush House. You could record on leader tape with those. But eventually, we got a couple of Studers in. Didn't have air conditioning to start with. I mean, we're recording this on a very hot day or very hot week. And we just have the windows open. But it was the eighth floor, so you didn't, apart from the odd 707 going by, you didn't get too much interference. It was very basic because the BBC, they didn't know whether to invest in it or not. Down in London, they looked around their noses at that and said, but the news read in Yorkshire, guys, no one will believe it. This is Capital Radio. I'd done an audition for Capital in 1973. Moving back, actually. I did an audition for Capital in 1973. Dave Cash was running it down in a sweaty little studio in Fleet Street. And I think they'd already knew who they were employing. I was talking to Graham Dean about this the other day. You know, he was from the Biscuit Factory, and even he didn't get a job, but they got Nicky Horn. They knew who they wanted, and they got who they wanted. I think they got Kenny back off the BBC. There's another one who got sacked from the BBC. It's like Devil's Island. You never quite get off, do you? They got Kenny on. But I think they had to go through the motions of doing a thing. And I got a lovely letter from Michael Buck saying, thanks for being, you know, nice to have you in. But it never happened. So I was a bit peed off with this. You know, I thought, oh, I should have got that, really. So every year I used to send in an annual audition tapes of 74, 75, 76. I said, here's my annual audition tape. Never got it. They've obviously got enough people on Euston Tower. I bumped into, it's funny, fate is funny. I bumped into an old pal of mine, a girl called Linda Monk, who worked at Leicester. And I suddenly met her in the wilds of Leicestershire. I walked into this pub and there she was. She said, I'm working for this new station, this new commercial station in Birmingham. Old pal of ours called John Russell was running it, a BRMB radio. Why don't you send a tape in, you know, to do holiday relief? So I said, all right, Linda. And I put a little tape together because I got all the kit, then I could do all the whiz-bang tricks. They're not very whiz-bang these days, but in 1974 they were you-know-what hot. And it was like Hollywood, because the next day the old telegram boy, you remember the old red motor, the old telegram boy came up with this come down and see us, we want to talk. And I got, it was just like Hollywood, and that was John Russell. Was it the HB Sauce Factory? It's renowned. People say, you know, can you tell me which way to BRMB? I said, it's just by the HB Sauce Factory, Ansel's Brewery. So just follow your nose, you'll find it. I was doing an afternoon show, and I think I was just sort of happy voice, and I'd always have a bit of a laugh. I wasn't too bad on the phones because I learnt that we did a thing called Tradio with three and four. You could swap stuff, I think, or sell stuff up to £10. Oh my goodness, can you imagine it now? I got that sort of voice, and they put me on the breakfast show eventually, which it was at 5 o'clock it started. It was not non-stop 4 hours. You had to play all the news cartridges in, all the none of this computer stuff, you know, all the ads were separate, you had to do all that. So there's no, Bohemian Rhapsody was great because it actually gave you time to have a pee.
Radio stations are rather like restaurants. If you go to a restaurant and you have a bad time, you never go back because there are plenty of other restaurants down the street.
I've never sort of got on well with management It's just that, you know, I suppose I don't like being told what to do. I don't know what it is, but we coexisted. But I resented going on the breakfast show because it just ruined me. You know, in the summer, like this time of year, you try and go to bed at 6:30 and try to sleep because you've got to be up at 3:30 getting there. And the kids are all playing, the sun's out. I thought, no, this isn't me. But I did it. But I've got that sort of voice, you know. I sound as if I'm enjoying myself even when I'm dying. I suppose my dying day I should be there. It was very good training. I mean, I used to do 6 hours a day. I used to do 4 hours in the morning on a Saturday. And then I'd do 2 hours in the evening, the soul show, which I probably wasn't the best presenter for that, but I kept the needles whacking, you know. But if you don't learn the craft then, and of course I did interviews as well and everything. I had some lovely people in interview. Had Elton John in. I've lost the tape, but I put him on my BBC Radio 1 audition tape. So I think he might have swung it for me. I came off, they took me off breakfast. You know, I said, I can't do it anymore. So there was nowhere for you to go, but they put me on weekend, Saturday and Sunday, which was nice. But I said, look, get Les Ross on. Les Ross is busting to do it. I think he was up at Tees, yeah. Oh, I don't know if he's professional. I said, Birmingham bloody loves him, you know.
And this is Leslie Ross welcoming you to the start of our very first day of transmissions here on Radio Tees 257 metres. Thanks for making the effort. Glad I did.
I did about another 6 months, and by then I got a little four-track recorder. I put all my money into gear. I got a nice little mix, a little four-track, and I was making this more complex stuff up, and I was making little sketches and stuff up for the Sunday afternoon show. And that's really where the Radio 1 thing took on, because people would just give me liners, you know. We used to have Nelly the Cleaner. Are you right? You know, real old Brummy, I'm all right, what I'm talking about. And I just cart that up. And I eventually built about two racks of these carts up. And how it finished, they let me go October 76. I thought, well, I got sacked from BR&B 76. So I thought, well, I'll send one to the BBC. I sent this tape now. I didn't know anybody. They always say it's, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's not always. I didn't know anybody down there. And I got a letter back with the old BBC envelope on. I thought, oh, it's Radio Leicester doing me Christmas shifts. I opened it, you know, oh, we'll see how you perform in our studio. But I thought, it's from Network. It's bloody, you know. They said, come down and have a go in our trousers department, see how you go. And I met up then with a chap called Dave Price, another one now dead. And we just got on like a house on fire. You know, he was into all the gear, all the technology and everything. And so was I. And we had the same sort of sense of humour. And I did some trail 76, and it was a parody. Damn jocks, damn disc jockers all here on Radio 1. It was Dem Bones. It wasn't too bad. I found that old jingle, that Radio Times. I dug that out, and we used that on Radio 1 for a bit. It's all about incongruous.
Daily Times at Big Ben Chimes are Radio Times.
The new Radio Times. Bobby brings back entertainment.
Big deal.
Swap Shop, Lucky Numbers, The Generation Game, the film that till death us do part. Certainly are. A sensational satellite broadcast by Jethro Tull, live from Madison Square Garden.
I sounded very young and energetic on it, but then again, you're making your way. You're trying to impress, so you're going. Jimmy Durante said, slow down, this is a reunion, not an audition. You know, so, but it was sort of an audition phase in those days. Used to do them for home, you know, because I've got a home studio, you see, this is the thing. I used to send them down the line. But you've got to make the, you book the line at London Control Room, because they only send it in mono, because one-track machines down there. But no, I used to do that. The chap in charge of trails that quarter was a chap called Keith Stewart. He, once again, a jazzer. He used to do jazz with Humph and all that lot. My first trailer went out the back end of 1976.
Radio 1's happy motoring stickers are out next week. 1.5 million of them. And you can pick up yours at a local filling station.
That's a good idea.
From next Monday, Radio 1 Sticker Scouts will be scouring the British Isles for the lucky drivers with a happy motoring sticker on their car.
I got a call. I was at Radio Leicester doing the odd continuity shift. They used to pay about, I don't know, 7 guineas. I think it was in double figures guineas. They were doing a presentation, just that was, this is, coming up later. All that, you know, like a con announce. It was like mini Radio 4. And I'm just about to go on air, and the phone goes. I said, oh, hello, this is Beverly Pond. Derek Chinnery's secretary. I've got Derek for you. Oh, hello, Derek, can I call you back? I'm just going on air. Bang, put the phone down. Now, rather like beating the boss at golf, this may not have been a good move, but thankfully, Chinnery and his old radio man, he understood. I said, I called him straight back, and I got back, and he understood. Yes, of course, you know, he understood I was going there. He said, we're doing Kid Jensen's coming off Saturday.
Hi, nice to be with you again.
How do you feel about doing 6 weeks, you know, with Dave Price producing? I said, yeah, not many. Other than stick pins in my eyes, what am I going to do? The real old BBC, then I don't think I ever had a contract. It was just a gentleman's agreement. I was on for 6 weeks, then they put me on for another four, and then they let me run the rest of the quarter. But that's how the BBC was. But I remember the first executive producer was a chap called Teddy Warwick, a legend. Jack Jackson's old producer. Just like, I mean, he's more concerned with bloody doing the Radio 1 football match and anything else. But just a love. He was just a calming influence as an executive producer I ever saw everything. And the first question they asked was at 12:05 when we finished, you know, what's he like to work with? And I said, it was great. You know, so I was in. But they wanted to know now. It's well down the list of priorities, that is. How many TV shows has he done? Has he done Love Island? The first one was Paul McCartney Wings with a little luck with me. That was Dave Price, it was programmed there.
With a little luck, we can help it out. We can make this whole damn thing work out.
Apart from that, oh, we had all the trends that were a bit sort of sharp end, you know. We had a lot of the punk stuff was coming through, was it Stranglers and all that. Ian Dury and the Blockheads. I thought, God, didn't it? I thought 8 million people heard that. I mean, coming from local radio, and I was the first, I'm pretty sure of this, I was the first to come from local radio, because Radio 1, Luxembourg, all the usual stuff. He said, but Bates from Radio 2. I just sort of imagined that weather map of British Isles. I thought, it's gone over there. And we had, there were just millions of listeners, because there wasn't much else anyway. Yeah. But yeah, when you own that microphone, you go, my God, there's 51 transmitters on the end of this. And you know, Zoe Kennedy came off the Pirates, Noel Edmonds came off Luxembourg, so they were used to it. But yes, it was such a quantum leap for a little lad from the backwaters of Leicester, yeah. Bit like, well, this is going to not explain anything really, because it was like Jack Jackson. Because Jack Jackson, old band leader, who started doing cutting up bits of comedy, and he got that off on some American jock in the 40s. I should know the name of these people, but... But I was working with this producer, Derek Chinnery, and Teddy Warwick, there he is again. And I said, well, Jack used to do this.
That's a new angle on chatting up a bird. I like to be in the movie with you by Tom Yates. Now, Robbie, you wanted to know how they train police dogs. Then let's go and meet Superintendent Harry Brindle.
Oh, sure, I'd love to see him.
Ah, here we are. May I come in? Ah, good morning, Super.
Morning, wonderful.
I thought they were on a sort of Jack Jackson show. So it evolved on air, really, just putting all these clips together and a bit of homemade stuff, because I wasn't too bad with any impersonations. I just thought, I've got 6 weeks to sort of show what I can do. I better give them what they want. Oh, no, it just grew organically, rather like B&B with all the drop-ins and everything. It just, stuff just happened. And stuff, bits of, I'm very good at sort of putting useless random bits together and pulling a thread through it, though I say it myself.
Now you're getting the idea.
I remember Teddy Warwick saying that dear old Jack Jackson, he got a letter from Kenneth Williams because Jack used to cut Kenneth Williams' lines out and do them himself.
And that would never do, would it?
Yeah, that's a disgrace, darling. Which I can understand. So, but I never did that, you see. I always let them have the punchline. I would never nick that. I just do a bit of link.
Elvis wouldn't hot because today's the anniversary of him coming out the US Army after 2 years' service for Uncle Sam. And all the girls went, and collapsed in a dead faint on the floor. Mind you, it wouldn't have happened in the British Army, you know.
Back in the 60s, we used to run a damn tight ship.
Well, chaps, I, as your battalion commander, would just like to say a few words to all...
And people say... Yeah, but, well, he always repeats, you know, I sort of point stuff up a little bit more than you need to. But you need to, if you're doing different bits, different accents and everything, you've got to just say it again. So you've got the listener's got one chance of hearing it. So you can understand what the next bit's coming. I don't want to be in there, but we used to do a lot of old jokes and everything. And later shows, I love the later shows in the 90s, where Johnny Beeling, he said, I want it more like Weekending and doing political satire. I got writers in off Spitting Image and all this. You know, I love those shows. The only bits I ever wanted to hear.
Hello.
Ah, hello.
This is the Telecom Economy Rates Information Officer's line. I'm busy at the moment.
But the early stuff was just old gags and bits and bobs. And there wasn't a lot of old... material to go at. I just had a knack for talking to dead people, basically. I mean, most of the people were dead on there, you know. They couldn't answer back.
That isn't funny, it's very silly.
Like falling off a log to me, I don't know. Jasper Carrot, of course, I used to know Jasper well. I used to work with him down at Birmingham. I was there with Radio A. Cox Green. That was Doolan's idea. So, yeah, I think you're going back to the old radio of the 50s. I've always been a sort of a magpie, just with the comedy, just a bit here, a bit there. So I probably pulled a bit here, a bit there from the comedy, round the horn and everything, various bits. And just had this gift of wheedle it all together.
Yes, it's... Adrian Jones.
Hey! Hello, gang. Whew, I nearly didn't get here at all today. See, on the way to the studio, I was mugged by a gang of ruffians.
You could drive down the M1, you could do it. I mean, I used to commute from Kettering, and I don't think I was on the air at 10 o'clock. I don't think I left Kettering much before quarter to eight. You just drive straight down. Now you need a week. But I would do the programme. I do 1 week. Next week, I go down and do all the links live with the tape from the previous week. That's we sort of flip-flop. But I always wanted to do live, but... a lot of it was live, all the weddings and the travel and everything. I never run, and people say this, and if you've not been in the hallowed portals, you probably won't understand, I never tired of going in the reception at BH, the old BH, which is still there, thank God. And I thought, all the people have been there. The abdication speech was done at church, everything. It just lifts you, it just raises your game, yeah. So I go in the Glass Menagerie now and I think, well, I don't know. I don't know if this has the same effect. But obviously it's an age thing. It obviously does to the youngsters, yeah. I'm never tired of it. And we used to have the old labyrinthine corridors around there because the old days, Radio 1, while the offices were in Egton House, the studios were... central control. You know, we had all the networks, 1, 2, 3, 4, all in one central conurbation. I think Everett was the worst. He never liked to get in and rehearse. So he'd be standing at... Teddy Warwick, again, was Ev's producer. And he'd be standing at the doors of Egton House. He said, we've got 30 doors to get through with three programme boxes. And he'd just go in right before, like, hello, darling, blah, blah, blah. And that was, and he was on air. As soon as he got in the studio, he wanted to be live on air. I was a bit more organised than that. Well, Dave Price was more organised. He'd make sure I was in there in plenty of time. But it was just amazing. All the cartridges in it, Noel Edmonds, you know, Dave Lee Travis. Bloody hell, you know. I made it. So it has a certain dreamlike quality to it, but at the same time, I felt a lot happier in the BBC than commercial radio. It's not to no axe to grind against BRNB. You've got a lot of egos. A lot of ego. Radio 1, although you think there'd be a lot of egos, there actually wasn't, because everybody had made it and nobody saw each other. They're all out busy opening supermarkets and all this. So we got on very well. And I just felt immediately at home in our atmosphere. And as I say, I got a good producer. Hopefully, I say to myself, I just slotted in. I just love the place and still do.
Old England isn't finished yet. It's finished now.
Adrian Jones.
Brother, you can say that again.
Now, quiet, lads. I've got to make my dramatic entrance.
I've always loved Time Out. I've always been a fan of Time Out ever since. I came on the first show, 1978, April 78. Took over from Kid Jensen. And Time Out gave me a glorious review. I mean, they didn't like the BBC particularly, although they weren't too anti, because a lot of good drama stuff on it. But Radio 1, I don't think they were too keen on it. And they gave me this glowing report. It's funny how young jocks given their first chance work so hard. But this guy, very funny, his impressions are great, and he sweats blood to get this slot going, you know. So I've always loved Time Out ever since. I'll take that. But the public, inverted commas, they loved it because they enjoyed the work. There are a few sort of dissenters. I think a lot of them, you know, were bitter because they got turned down for a job at Radio 1. You've got that lot as well. I mean, the early day trolls. But generally, we did very well. And it was a little bit. They called it intellectual, but it wasn't. I mean, compared to Tony Blackburn and David Hamilton, who are both loved, you know, but it was a little bit more. You had to think a wee bit more. It wasn't just a straight music show. I saw Tony Blackburn a few weeks ago. He said, you should be back on air. I said, oh, Tony, I'm too old now, you know. I ran the complete spectrum. Noel Edmonds said, when are you coming back on air again? Andy Kershaw. John Peel was my biggest fan. I think I met him down at Mallory Park. Not the Mallory Park one with the Bay City Rollers. But Peel, I think Peel always, he was always playing the curmudgeon, but he actually quite liked it, really. I mean, he was on the 306 on the same floor, just on nodding terms, and then, but I used to impersonate Peel, and you were very funny on that, you know. And then I got the respect. It was good because they were always wary of me because they didn't know who I was. Alan Freeman was just the greatest. He was great for encouragement because he used to follow me on Saturday mornings. They were always wary. Ed Stewart was wary. And then they realised I wasn't any threat to them because they're not going to spend the whole week putting an hour's radio together. But it took some doing because they were very wary of the same with the advertising, the voiceover business in the 80s. It was so lucrative. Who's this, you know? And they soon realised you're not a threat and actually. It was great working with your heroes. I mean, so Peel and everything.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Ed. See you tomorrow.
Radio 1 on the road.
And I said, it's a very wet and windy Blackpool, but we have...
Dave Price was in charge of the roadshow openers in 1978. So after we'd done the Radio 1 show, we'd go down into the pit, the little studio in the basement, like 10 foot above the Bakerloo line. Train coming! Stop, okay. And then with the train going, we'd do the next bit. The big today, live. That didn't come till much later.
The Radio 1 Roadshow.
Today, live from Tor Abbey Meadows, Torquay, with Stark Raving Mad Steve Wright!
I used to do stuff late 80s, and then Dave Price came back on to do something. He said, let the temps establish. And then today, live.
Radio 1 on the road.
And that's the bit they all did. That's the bit that when it comes on TV with the clip of the roadshow, so you know, you'll get told Mark and Lard, whoever it is, and they'll cut me out and put that. It's back to Kenneth Williams. They'll cut me out and put that in.
Today, live from the home of Plymouth, where is Steve Wright?
Mikey Wallmans used to record them in the mid-80s, and he said Pete Tong did them after Adrian in 94. He said, but I really think Adrian was born for the job because I just over the top. And somebody last year got me a t-shirt made today .. live from. So I remember that. We're back to Kenneth Williams again. I don't know, his ghost, he used to live around here, didn't he? All that wonderful acting, most marvellous actor, but of course all people remember him for is, no, Barbara, tint up first, bunk up later. So as I say, I still get asked to do a couple. But it was good fun, and it Smiley Marley, I think I've been doing some for him and Mike Reed doing their little radio thing, and they said, oh, it makes such a difference. I just spit them out, you know. It doesn't have much resonance with me, but I know what you mean. It was 15 years. I think Tommy Vance did a couple of years, but I think it was 78 to 93. I did the
Today Live.
From the rugby club St Ives with Raven Mad Steve Wright.
As I got older, I learnt how to... You know, you project from the diaphragm, darling. I got more theatrical. But it hasn't, thankfully, hasn't changed at all. I used to be all that squeaky up there. But a lot of people did. I mean, I had a thing of Bates doing a trailer about 45 years ago. And he's, you know, very young and excited. And none of us sound much to say. But the voice, the actual voice has not changed. Just the way I use it, I've got more... More resonance to it if I need it, darling. A bit of theatrical.
Welcome to 1980. Not a sound effect. That really was a cork.
Well, the 80s, it was a decade of change anyway. I mean, the beginning, we were just huge. I mean, the commercial radio was popping up here, there and everywhere. I don't think it's a decade... But the first half, the BBC management left us alone. For the first half of the 82 to 85, I mean, Steve Wright said, he said, I just can't believe. You just go on in front of a live microphone with the BBC network and you just say whatever you like.
From all of us lads here at Radio 1, a very happy new year.
There was us pulling huge figures. There was EastEnders had started the mid-80s, and they were pulling like 22 million. So they left us alone, so they could concentrate on how many wafer biscuits they wanted for Glyndebourne and all the Radio 3 business. Because we've got those lovely new studios, 84, beautiful, custom-built in Egdon House. They were the best radio studios ever, no doubt about it. Myself and Wright could just make the boogers talk, you know. They were laid out beautifully. It was like playing a wonderful keyboard. That was Johnny Beeling. But the change, of course, was in the air. Johnny had got, Janice Long, people, youngsters in. He got young producers, Phil Ward, Large, and people brought those in. I think that change, perhaps more evolving. We had this nice situation where you got old, experienced jocks with young producers, and that worked very well. You know, all the media sort of sneer at the old jocks. I mean, Johnny Beeling, he said, Dave Lee Travis, people say, what's the biggest show on radio in the 80s? Oh, it's the chart show. No, Dave Lee Travis, Sunday morning, huge audience. So Johnny said, what can I do? He said, you know, Johnny was a bums on seats man, but it wasn't very trendy.
1 FM DLT.
Good morning. Welcome to the programme. Our thanks to Gary Davis. How nice of you to come round on my invitation. The carriages will be at 12:30.
All right, so you can have your... And you've got the political inspection as well. They were... You've got the Tories, and they always wanted to... Never understood, you know, where they couldn't flog it off and make it a commercial station. Because it's different, because commercials don't do anything new, you know. Yeah, a time of change, but I think it evolved rather nicely. I suppose you could have got rid of some of us older jocks, I don't know. But it was working well because the music was young. And you got experienced presenters. I mean, it works in America, people who they want to listen to on the radio. But I don't look back on that. You know, it had to change, but just the way it was done. But I remember going to Johnny a couple of years ago. He said, oh, Johnny, was all the writing's on the wall. I said, Johnny, I'm thinking of buying a 24-track Studer for the home studio. It's going to be at least 22,000 quid. He said, well, I've got no, you know, he said, I've got no, I'm not going to move you or anything. But so I did a couple of years with that. But we knew it was, you know, we knew the red flags were going up. I knew where the comedic boundaries were. I used to nudge him a bit, same as Kenny did. But, okay, feel the odd complaint. But the thing, you know, we as far as I was personally, I was going to say, I was putting all the new comedy on, or putting all the new Americans. So you don't need the Americans. Then nobody plays American comedians. They used to love them. Emo Phillips, Stephen Wright. And I introduced all those. But they didn't know. I mean, Bannister didn't know what I did. He just looked at him. Oh, 45, he can't be any good. Out. And I just looked at my age and that was it. I got a call. We were doing a programme I used to do, British Forces Network. So we were all in myself, Bob Sinfield, one of the writers, Kate, the actress, lovely, marvellous actress. They sacked her as well. They should have kept her on. She'd run rings around most of them. And I got a call from Chris Lycett. We were in the middle of doing a comedy sketch. He said, bad news, I'm afraid. I said, just before Christmas. And he said, yeah, he said, it'd be your last show on. I said, well, nothing, it wasn't unexpected. And my last show, Peel was in tears. It was just horrible. And poor old Bob Harris. I mean, Jackie Brambles was... She went into Bannister. She said, all the changes, I mean, they called it the Brady One bloodbath, Piers Morgan, in the Sun, you know, the bizarre column. And she went in to see Bannister and she said, are there any more changes? No, you have my word, there'll be no more changes. 3 days later, she sees in the Evening Standard, Brambles axed. They didn't have the balls to tell, they just leaked it to the... They did that with Tony Blackburn as well. The BBC are terrible with this. They didn't have the balls to face... He never faced me at all. He said, you know, oh, do you want Matthew? I said, no, I don't want to see the bastard. I don't. But he didn't have the guts to tell you, you know. They were not management at all. And dear old Bob Harris, dear old Bob, thank God Bob came back because he's such a lovely, lovely man, as you know. And he was there. Matthew, I felt sorry for it. Joe Grace was Bannister's secretary, who now married to Simon Bates. And she's a lovely girl. And of course, she was getting all the flack because she was down the field for. Bannister's down at the Groucho Club, pissing it up with Danny Baker. And she's having to field all these calls. And Bob Harris was there for 3 days. He wanted to know what was happening with the show. Oh, yeah, she'll be all right. Yeah. And eventually returns to the Groucho Club. Oh, yeah, you're fired. Oh, we're just dreadful. So that was. That was not the BBC that I joined. That was not the gentleman's BBC where we had a, you know, gentleman's contract. You didn't have a contract because if they said you're on, you know. And that was not the BBC I joined. So as far as that goes, I was glad to get out. Mind what they don't know, I was producing a lot of comedy stuff under an assumed name for some of the act, Mark Goodyear and stuff, for all the following year. You know, because they couldn't get anybody to do it. It just got... I mean... I think they sacked... Who was the lacrosse captain? What was her name? Liz Forgan. And they just sacked... They were in a feeding frenzy. They sacked Gary Davis. And then they found out... They looked at the schedules and found out... They've got no bloody presenting 3 hours here, 4 hours there. And they had to get Gary back. Same with Nicky Campbell. Liz Forgan. Ooh, I like that Spin the Wheel show. That was it. Those were the people who were running the bloody place. So you can imagine me getting a bit teed off. But I'd gone by then. And also, they had a bunch of kids doing the contracts. Oh, no, we're not going through BBC contracts anymore. Well, they drew up these bloody contracts, and they were so full of holes, you could drive a coach and horses through it. They already contracted me for the next quarter, the first quarter of 1994. And then Bannister said, no, get rid of them. But the contract was still there. So I just waved my silk down there in Surrey, and they just paid up. They paid up the quarter, so I did get something out of it. No, I bloody deserved it.
I think we'll play that for Dave Price, who was my first ever producer at Radio One, and he's watching me today. Not much older, but a little wiser. And that was the first record we played on our very first show in 1978. Should have taken you back to the Graham Library by now, shouldn't we, really, Dave? Oh, they're in as well. What's the fine on that? Five feet. Oh, but cheaper to keep me on, really.
Jackie Brambles, she, her husband, went to see Bannister, and she got a good pay, and she deserved it too. Thankfully, she went to CBS. I go down to San Francisco. There, she's doing the four-hour breakfast show, TV and radio on KPIX in San Francisco, the Bay today. Good luck to her. Just a horrible time. You were coming on the joyous times at the beginning of the 80s and everything else, and then it... Because of management, it just went down the hill. A lot of producers thought the record companies would still speak to the baby. Of course they don't. You know, you deal with the baby. No, I knew it was coming, but it just wasn't pleasant. Oh, no, I didn't think I was going on in perpetuity.
Charles, have you seen my career?
Yes! It's behind you!
The one thing that was wrong, and I think Radio 2 came to... They should have moved Bates, DLT, Radio 2. But they were still there with Amanda Varney and Matt Munro. I love Matt Munro, by the way. But all that stuff, and they didn't change. They did. They didn't sort of feed the audience in. So consequently, they will say they lost 6 million. I think they lost near 9 million listeners from Radio 1. They all went to commercial radio, and some to Radio 2. But the gap... The yawning chasm between Radio 1 and Radio 2. I mean, now you can't hardly tell them apart. But in those days, it was just too big for the audience to make the jump.
Yes, it's time for your weekly Sunday afternoon get-together with the strings of the BBC Radio Orchestra, conductor Neil Richards.
I was doing commercials. I was making commercials for Fox and things. So I kept busy, really. And I did a time on Fox because I knew people there in Oxford. That was a nice little station, and that got... management as well. No names, no pack drill. But there were lovely people, and I still see some of them as well. You know, I always kept in with everybody. And then I went to... Bates got me a job on LBC, or when the Australians took over. What was it called? News Talk, whatever it was. You never said where you were. You just said it was LBC, because otherwise nobody knew what you were talking about. And I enjoyed that. I had the best part of 18 months there. It was different, but... I said I took to it like a duck to water, but I took to it like in the shallow end of the water, and I soon got it. They were surrounded by a good team. I had a couple of excellent producers for ideas. Whoever came in, I could chat and keep the needles going. You know, I've always been able to do. I mean, you had to, because I remember we had one thing. We had a big competition, a nice big prize. I think it was the week in the Seven Valley Railway, big hotel and everything. So the big Friday night, the big final. One of the teams didn't turn up. I said to the producer, I said, well, what do you want to do? Oh, we just went through it with the one team. And then we had another one. We've got an interview with Mr. Boom, the one-man band, and he didn't show up. So she just said, what do we do for the next hour? She said, here's the Daily Mirror, so you can pull something out of that. So you just do stuff to generate calls. But I could just talk, and I've always had that ability. You know? I think it's gone now. It's left me now. But... nothing fazed you. Honestly, after 18 months at LBC, nothing would faze you.
On Friday the 10th of April 1992, in the heart of the City of London, the IRA parked a van outside 30 St Mary Axe, the home of the Baltic Exchange.
The £100 bomb was the biggest to go off in London since World War II.
I was on LBC when the Exchange building went up, the mid-90s. I was interviewing Bernard Manning. All of a sudden, and suddenly the producer comes in. Look, we've got to... Bernard, I've got to go. But yeah. And suddenly, all the people... It was a Friday night. All the nice journals and everything, just having a drink and everything. Suddenly, it was great to see Reuters, and they just burst into action. They did what they did, and they were there bringing... Because, I mean, I was... We got the big main TV news, and I got clips on. Clips of... I had 10 minutes ago on the TV and everything, you know. So they say, with the old thing, with the bombs going off, it's wonderful ground, because it's a horrible thing to happen, but it does teach you the ropes. You can do anything after that.
London News Talk, 11:52 a.m. Original Talk Radio.
The one highlight was being Clive Bull asking me to sit in for him, because that was the top show, and it was, he got all these strange characters, you know, and he knew that I wouldn't cock it up. I wouldn't sort of send them up. I just I've seen that, it's flying saucers down the Tottenham Court Road. Oh, really? Yeah. It's about what sort of height? And I just go along, same as Climb did. I wouldn't send anything up. So he knew it was in good hands, and I had the same producer as well, Jonathan. What's in Jonathan's box? And we used to have this old cardboard box with like a brand tub thing, and the listeners would say up a bit, right a bit, and the top prize was three dog Wellington bloody boots, and the phones would blow off the wall for it. So there's no account. We do phone in rodeo. The first thing you learn is there's no account of a taste. I was doing a thing one night, just chattering away about, I've got my own hacker radio, and I was listening to this. Suddenly I look at the screen, and I've got 20 calls on Hacker Radio. I used to know Mr. Not Hacker, so big, Roberts Radio. And they were made down at Thames Ditton that way, East Molesey. Yeah. I looked at the screen and there's 20. So we spent the next hour talking about Mr. Roberts and Roberts Radio. You never know. If you come in with a topic, you think, oh, this is going to go. Often it doesn't. You can't. It's like catchphrases. You can't manufacture them. You know, it's just, it just evolves. The public will tell you what they want. That was, as coming to the end of my little broadcasting career, I thought Clive Buller's out. He's like sort of John Peel asking me to sit in on that.
Trio, the amazing pen that draws three colours all at the same time. It swirls, loops, curves, zigzags, and it's just plain fun.
I'm mainly doing commercials. I was in the commercial production. I got like Peter Dixon and everything. I could draw on this huge pool of voices, and I wasn't bad at doing the scripts because they were like sort of extended little sketches, really, a lot of them. And we won a couple of awards with that. And then, obviously, Fox, they got took over by Capital Office, and they pulled it all in-house, and some of our clients were quite not too happy about it. But they said, well, that's it, you've got to have that now, you'll be produced in-house.
40 minutes past nine. 684 684 is our number here. 684 684. Give us a bell. Go on, and we'll give you hell. Get that into a jingle for September Day when we go on air full-time. To everyone working at tonight, Brighton Festival. I don't know what he said, but
one was called Christmas FM. One was called Ada FM. You know the river there, Ada. I should have had that, shouldn't I? Really, I think I did. And then we had Johnny Walker down for because Walker and Brighton is in Brighton is a great attraction for him because he remembers like the Who and all the mods and rockers down there. Yes, so he came down on the. I think he got rid of his BMW. He said no. I said don't. Oh, no, he got rid of his Harley. He had Harley Davidson's, but he said, no, he said, they're just doing Harley Davidson aftershave and Harley Davidson. He said, I'll go for a BMW. But he came down on his on the bike with his then girlfriend, and I think he did four shows. Yeah, he loved it down there.
Well, just in.
Piece of late-breaking programme information.
Yeah.
At 11 p.m. this evening, there will be a montage of the finest moments of the 28 days of this broadcast.
It's going to run a whole hour, too. It's
a minute past 11, we'll get back to the show.
Sorry I trod on that gag there, Johnny.
I got pulled out of retirement to 2011. No, 2010. And Sean Tilley, who's been a marvellous custodian of a lot of Radio 1 stuff, and he said, oh, you know, do you want to do it? I said, oh, I don't really, Sean, I don't know, I forgot the bits. I said, oh, so I put this thing together, and Mark Grinnell, lovely producer down there, still down there, Southwest, and they put me on, and I was on the Channel Islands, and Gloucester, and what else is down there, Devon and Cornwall. I said, I don't know if I can still do it. Anyway, I could. It was all recorded, that one. And then they said, oh, do another one. And then I did four. I think the last one I did in 2013. And I actually got the old team back. I got Kate Blackshaw, who was the actress for 5 years on the Radio 1. She used to do all the Queen and Margaret Thatcher. And I put her back on. I said, Kate, we're doing the old show. It's like the Blues Brothers. We're putting the band back together. We're doing one last show. And she came in and did it. And it was a nice finale to it all.
Sounds better on the BBC too, doesn't it? It's Shaking Stevens, a little thing entitled
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Well, close enough.
I had two girlfriends, but of course they weren't in show business. It's best they're not in show business. But they could never understand, you know, Gail. Sunday I would have to start on the. I had three sketches to get out on the Sunday. Then I had to do another three sketches, another 20 minutes on the show. And then the show had to be ready and dubbed Tuesday night. So she could never understand. Her catchphrase was, oh, the monsoon is upon us. I said, yeah, it is. She nobody put up with that. I had a couple of girls radio. But then again, if you're just doing local radio, you still don't understand the commitment you have to have. I said to him, I said, well, that Greenwich time signal never waited for me once at 1 o'clock. It has to be done, you know. In my job, with the amount of commitment I had, putting those shows together, the two, yeah, I've always been on my own now, and I like that. But you have to do it, you know, if you decide you're going to do that. And you sell your soul to the company because the company was great. But that's what you have to do. You have to have 110% commitment. So I'm better now. So I'm big mates with Kiki D. Now I'm doing her promotion. And we get on great, because she's the same, so we just get on great. Well, come and have a drink, love. Hey, do you want a meat pie? Oh, but she's in Australia. Kiki's in Oz. They've been offered Oz before. They've done 15 gigs, I think, not down to 40, because the first gig, I think, was 12 hours after a 24-hour flight on a different country. I said, Kiki, I said, don't. I said, we love you, but you are a 72-year-old lady. I said, don't think about it. But they pulled that one. But they're going down very well, I think. Promotion. I do promotion. I had to call BBC West Mids, you know. And they got a nice, lovely girl on reception. I said, you want an interview with Kiki D? She said, I'm sorry, I don't know who Kiki D is. I said, no, you won't, but your audience will. So, oh, well, but they got on fine. We got a lovely sketch out of them. And it was two of them presenting until they started singing Don't Go Breaking My Heart as I Do It. I played to Kiki in the car. She just got covered. She got her head in the... Oh, no. But it is enjoyable. We get... I do quite a few gigs. But it's just completely different, like, completely different, although I'm still in the business. I just want to sit there, daytime TV, watching Bargain Hunt and Tipping Point. That's it. I don't drink at home. I drink socially. I've been social for about 40 years now. But I'd never drink at home. But, I mean, I could just sit with a nice glass of wine. Trouble is, I'd have about 6 glasses of wine. But I drink socially when we're out. I've done a nap. I basically knackered myself. I burnt myself out doing it 15 years. Well, look, it's more than 50 years, 30 years, really. I was always doing stuff. I don't resent any of it. No, I don't feel no, I think it's wonderful from a little lad. You know, I mean, I don't even resent the bloodbath thing. It was just an episode. That was just nasty. But because I started off living in a little wooden bungalow in the middle of the wilds of Leicestershire, and I did that. I did what I did. No, I don't. No, I'm not that sort, really. But I'd like to be remembered for the technical expertise. I didn't know Kenny Everett that well, but we used to work completely different ways. But we had a mutual respect because we did all the technical stuff. They all say, oh, Everett, you know, technical. But they never mentioned it to me. I mean, it's a good thing in a way because I don't notice it because it's all so smooth. I'd like to remember for some of the technical innovations I did. For a start, you never heard when it came out of a sketch, it ended with a laugh. It didn't go into the next word. I had a selection of laughs on there, different EQs. I just put a laugh on that. That would do that. I also remember doing an album, and doing a Monty Python thing, and I got the applause, and I got matched that. One was in mono, and one was in stereo, and I just matched the applause, and I just panned it out, so it suddenly from mono, it suddenly broadened out into the Monty Python sketch. I think they cut it out the bloody album, you know, sod's laws. I thought, why bother? But you know, they took sound design was a word just coming through in those, but it really was design. I did enjoy the technical side of it. I listened to a little BBC Surrey, BBC Sussex, lovely little station. It's like, it's like old fashioned, but it's classic radio. No, I don't miss it at all. And I've got my sort of fill of the BBC and everything by doing Kiki's promotion. I'm always dealing with people. So, no, I've still got a toe in the water. So I've been rather lucky, really.
Adrian Just. For more in this series, follow the Radio Moments Conversations podcast.